welcome to this edition of On Background here on WKXL 1-9, 1450 and ConcordNewsRadio.com. I am Chris Ryan with Paul Steinhauser. Appreciate you joining us for the show, which is presented by the New Hampshire Healthcare Association, fighting for those who fight for you. The New Hampshire Healthcare Association. For information, check out NHHCA.org. Well, we have a really great show for you today. We're going to go in the Wayback Machine in the final three segments of the program with interviews with Barack Obama, John McCain, and President Clinton just prior to the 2008 New Hampshire primary, which, believe it or not, was 10 years ago Monday. So we're going to take you back in the memory machine on this edition of On Background. But first, as we bring in Paul during the Snowmageddon edition of the show, as he joins us on the program via the phone today to talk a little about what happened at the State House this week. And they certainly got started really strong in the new year.
They sure did. They sure did. And one of the biggest issues, the most controversial issues that was left over from last year, two of them actually were voted on by the State Senate and by the State House. They got it in on Wednesday just before everything was canceled on Thursday for the big snowstorm. Let's start with a bill that would tighten the state's voting eligibility laws. What it would basically do right now in New Hampshire, if you're domiciled in the state, you can vote, and you can also run for office. But that has been, we know, Chris, you know, there's been a lot of resentment and a lot of anger by Republicans in the state for many, many years when it comes to voter fraud, saying out-of-state people have been coming in and voting in New Hampshire elections. They've for a long time blamed the Democrats for gaming the system here in New Hampshire. What this bill would do, Chris, it would change the definition of voting here from domicile to the tighter restriction, the stricter restriction of residency. And Democrats say, wait a minute, this is a voter suppression bill. It's basically aimed at all those out-of-state college students who go to New Hampshire colleges and universities, who vote in our elections. And, well, most of them vote for Democrats. That's fair to say. They call it a voter suppression bill. It passed the state Senate along party lines, 14 Republicans voting in favor of it, 9 Democrats voting against it. I had a chance right after the vote to speak to State Senator Andy Sanborn of Bedford, the conservative who's also running for Congress in the 1st District, and Martha Fuller Clark, the longtime state senator from Fort Smith, who's also a vice chair of the Democratic Party here in the state. She said it's unfairly targets college students. Sanborn said that this is going to basically give voters here in the state a sense of trust when it comes to the validity of our elections. Take a listen.
You know, I think trust is the first thing that are in most people's minds when I talk to them about voting and voting integrity. People want to know that their vote actually counted. And there are many people I speak to out there, depending upon what range it is. Some think there's a lot of voter fraud. Others don't think there is any. But a lot of people are very concerned to make sure that their vote counts. Look, in our state with 425 members, including the governor, that lots of our elections can wind up by 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 votes. We see other states like Virginia that was actually a tie for control of the body. Every single vote does count. It's our responsibility here in the legislature to make sure that when people walk into that voting booth, that they know that their vote will not be canceled out by someone who voted or who shouldn't have.
I think it's a voter suppression bill because it's putting certain responsibilities by defining everyone as a resident of the state that I think will be a disincentive for students to register to vote.
Hey, Chris. Here's the interesting thing now. This bill's got to go back to the State House of Representatives. They've got to vote on it. I would assume it'll pass through the State House of Representatives. But the Republican governor of this state, Chris Sununu, has issues with this bill. And he says he won't sign it as is. A little tricky line here. As is, as written. So if they make some changes to it, he may put his pen to it. But right now, as is, he will not sign it. Remember, Chris Sununu just a few weeks ago became a YouTube star when a voting rights advocate got him on. Yeah, remember that?
So yes.
He was kind of penned in on this one here. So it's interesting to see what's going to happen here in the negotiations between the governor's office and the Republicans that control both houses of the legislature to see where this one ends up, Chris.
Is there any indication as to what would have to change in regards to the legislation in order for the governor to support it?
Yeah, he hasn't spelled that out yet. But what he said he has a problem with is any bill that kind of unfairly targets one specific group. Now, Democrats say this basically targets those out-of-state college students here in New Hampshire that go to our universities and colleges and that are voting. So it'll be interesting to see what the leaders of the state House and the state Senate, the Republican leaders, try to do to change the language here to make it more palatable to the governor.
Is there any clear difference in your view between how this law targets college students as compared to SB 3, which passed earlier in the session, targets students?
Yeah, SB 3 doesn't change the definition of domicile to residency, so it didn't touch that one. And that was why a lot of Republicans begrudgingly voted for SB 3. They said, all right, it's better than nothing, but, you know, to them, they're all still mad that all these college students in Durham and in Keene and in Plymouth and elsewhere, you know, voted for Hillary Clinton. They're saying, hey, without all those votes for Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump would have won the state of New Hampshire and its four electoral votes in the 2016 presidential election. So, you know, SB 3 didn't go all the way. Now, SB 3's got its own issues, and it's caught up in a legal challenge right now, which we won't hear until August. So it'll be interesting to see what happens because, you know, the November election is just a couple months after that. And the governor was a huge supporter of SB 3. He's got his issues on this one. But once again, New Hampshire is front and center nationwide when it comes to the battle over, well, you pick it, either voter suppression or voter fraud. You pick your definition. But once again, New Hampshire firmly right in the bullseye, in the national bullseye on this one, Chris.
In your view, in looking at the legislation and hearing the debate, does the legislation clearly define whether or not college students can vote? In other words, can a college student claim to be domiciled here in New Hampshire, claim to be a resident in New Hampshire, still by going to the polling place, showing their ID, and indicating that they are a resident of a particular, whether it's on a campus or an off-campus site? I mean, will that person still be able to vote? I mean, has there been a change in whether or not a college student can claim residence?
No, in fact, that's what Republicans are arguing. This changes nothing, they say, and the college students will still be able to vote by claiming domicile. But what the bill would do is after you do that, after you register to vote, then you're going to have to become a resident within 60 days. And by that, you're going to have to either, if you have a car, you're going to have to register the car here in New Hampshire or get a, or I think both, get a New Hampshire's driver's license. What Democrats are saying, a lot of Democrats who oppose this bill are saying, is basically that's a poll tax, and it's targeting college students who, while they may want to go to school here and be domiciled here, they may not want to become residents of the state, which is, you know, a bigger step. So this argument is going to keep going. It'll be interesting to see what happens after, I would assume, it passes the state House of Representatives, the negotiations with the governor. But again, New Hampshire, when it comes to voter fraud and voter suppression, is smack in the middle of all the fights right now.
In conclusion, there was another important piece of legislation which passed and will become law in the state of New Hampshire, establishing education savings account. The governor will sign this. It was a Senate bill which went to the House, and the House did, in fact, pass this legislation.
Yep, the school choice bill. It would allow some parents basically to take their children out of public schools and then spend the state tax dollars that would have gone to that public school on the other form of education, wherever the parents send their kid, be it homeschooling or private school tuition or even some parochial school tuition. Now, Democrats have railed against this bill and the forming of these educational savings accounts, which would be the vehicle to do this, to kind of get past the hurdles of the constitutional hurdles that this bill would present. They say it basically would weaken public education by diverting these tax dollars to private schools and even some parochial schools. The supporters of this bill, mostly Republicans, say, wait a minute, this is basically school choice here. This is a good thing for parents. It'll give parents, especially some lower-income parents, a choice to, you know, decide where their kids should go to school. This has been a fight we've seen for some time. As you said, the governor was a big proponent of school choice, and he will be signing this. It does have to go back to the state Senate for another vote, but it'll pass through the state Senate. The Republicans have the majority there. This has been a big fight, and it's also included our state education commissioner, Frank Edelblue, who is a huge proponent of this, and he's got his own controversial baggage. It's also a national battle going on as well. But once again, New Hampshire, right in this national spotlight when it comes to a controversial issue like this. One thing that wasn't voted on this week, got delayed because of the snowstorm, is a bill that would legalize small amounts of marijuana. Remember, last year, New Hampshire took the small step of decriminalizing marijuana. Now there's a bunch of bills that will be in front of the legislature this year that would legalize some forms of marijuana for recreational purposes. And that first big vote will happen on Tuesday coming up.
Well, Paul, look forward to having you back in studio next week here for On Background, where we're going to focus on CD1. Carol Shea Porter will join us on the program, and we'll also be joined by a number of individuals who are looking to take her seats, both on the Republican and Democratic side. Paul, appreciating you joining us, and stay safe here in the winter weather.
Thanks, Chris. Have a great day.
Paul Steinhauser joining me here on the program, my co-host for On Background. For the remainder of the program today, we're going to take a look back to 2008, where we will discuss the issues around the 2008 presidential campaign, the 2008 New Hampshire primary on its 10-year anniversary. This is On Background, presented by the New Hampshire Healthcare Association. Welcome back here on Background at WKXL 159, 1450 and ConcordNewsRadio.com. I am Chris Ryan on Background, presented by the New Hampshire Healthcare Association. So we boys and girls are coming up on the 10th anniversary of the 2008 New Hampshire primary, a primary which shaped me to a large degree as an interviewer, as a reporter. I was very young at that point in time. I did not think so. I thought I was old and knew everything at that point in time. But in retrospect, in listening to some of these interviews and how I sound and so forth, in a lot of ways, I was better. I was listening to an interview of Joe Biden, which was really substantive and asked a lot of big questions. And we'll have that interview coming up because we're coming up on the 10th anniversary of the New Hampshire primary. And we're going to listen to some of the interviews from 2008 as we come up on that 10th anniversary, which was on the 8th of January 2018, which is this upcoming Monday. And we're going to do that here on a snowy day in the great state of New Hampshire, because I think a lot of these interviews, some of the stuff is timed, obviously, and is more of a historical bent than current events, but it's always interesting, in my view, to listen back to folks talking about what they're going to do in going into office, what their ideals are. And for some context, Barack Obama, when we did this interview on the 7th of January 2008, was on his way to the Democratic nomination with a win here in New Hampshire. And that win was pretty much a certainty. Obama was coming off a victory 10 years ago on Wednesday in Iowa, and Hillary was looking to deal the knockout punch to Hillary Clinton here in New Hampshire. And that would have been it. And polls, both the Obama internal polls, the Clinton internal polls, public polling indicated that not only was Barack Obama going to win here in New Hampshire, but he was going to win by double digits. And that is the context and the scene setter for this conversation from January the 7th, 2008, with Barack Obama.
Welcome back on the Reporter's File here on WKXL 1450 and WKXL1450.com. It's an honor to be joined by Illinois Senator Barack Obama, fresh off his win in Iowa. Senator Obama, how are you?
I am doing great, and thanks so much for having me, although I have to confess I'm on a cell phone, and so... as you know, on these drives between towns, we may drop off at some point, in which case I'll try to call you back.
That's one of the beauties of New Hampshire, is present. That's the first thing you have to do is get better cell phone coverage for us here in New Hampshire. We'll be very happy with you. First question I want to ask you is, as we're seeing the polls right now and talking to pollsters and getting a feel for things, it appears that it is not a matter of if you win tomorrow, but how much you win by tomorrow. What is your message to voters, and are you starting to feel that this is going to be your day tomorrow and perhaps your presidency and perhaps your nomination as well?
Well, you know what? I don't believe in polls. They spook me. I don't like them when they're up, and I don't like them when we're down. I think that tomorrow we'll know what's going to happen. And I will tell you that we've been seeing enormous crowds as we travel across the state. We've been seeing, you know, overflow rooms. People are really excited about what happened in Iowa because I think they believe that this is a sign of the American people activating themselves and asserting themselves in the political process in a way they haven't done maybe in a generation. And, you know, that is so promising because the only way we're going to be able to actually get health care reform, the only way that we're really going to be able to deal with an energy policy that makes sense and frees ourselves off dependence on foreign oil, the only way we do that is to have the American people holding folks accountable. And I think that's the chance that we have to do in this election.
It seems there have been a lot of change candidates who've come through New Hampshire, and a lot of people have thrown their weight behind him and said, I want this person to win, and they always lost to the so-called establishment candidate. And perhaps your win in Iowa, and maybe you've shared this thought, said to people, you know what, this is a candidacy that is actually going to take flight. This is an individual who we can actually believe in.
Well, I think there's no doubt that we have a chance to win the nomination. I wouldn't be in this race if we didn't. And I think that having won the Iowa caucuses, which is traditionally a state where, you know, Democrats come to caucus and it doesn't have independents traditionally, we changed that dynamic. We attracted independents to go to the caucus. We won among Democrats, but we also got independents and even some Republicans to cross over. And, you know, if we can do that in the first two states, then I think that sends a message that we can do it for the country as a whole. And that's what we're going to need, a working majority to deliver on change.
And you come to Concord High tonight for your final rally before the primary. And what about your message? What about your candidacy? Do you think has really captivated New Hampshire, Iowa, and perhaps also the nation?
Well, I think, you know, we've been talking about change consistently. And by the way, very specific change. You know, we're not talking about change in the abstract. We're saying we need a more transparent and accountable government. We need to break the revolving door between business and government. We need to reduce the power of special interests and lobbies. We need to have a health care plan that everybody can count on. We've got to have an energy proposal that curbs global warming and is actually going to reduce our dependence on foreign oil. We need to make college more affordable. We need to have a foreign policy that makes us safe but doesn't alienate the rest of the world. We've been very specific about the changes that are needed, but I also think that there's been an aspirational element to our campaign where we say, look, just because we haven't seen our government work in a long time doesn't mean it can't work. It just means that people have to get involved, and people, I think, are excited by that prospect.
You'll be happy to know that Governor Romney is now talking as well about a fundamental change, which is something that you brought forth earlier in this campaign. Now, he is the candidate for fundamental change, but you'll have to deal with him,
yeah,
perhaps.
You know, it's flattering, you know, how suddenly everybody's talking about change. It's catching on.
Absolutely. And you said earlier today on Good Morning America that the Clinton campaign was kind of depressing in how it has been run. And the next quote I'm going to give to you may add to that. President Clinton earlier today in Henniker made the argument that what is going on in this election is that they're eliminating a candidate who has made any change in the past and electing someone who has never done anything. That is a quote from former President Clinton. Is that the type of politics that you're trying to work past?
Yeah, look, I think that over the last several days, you know, the Clinton camp has, you know, really tried to throw everything in except the kitchen sink at us. And it's just not working because, look, it's not I think people recognize that it's more of a political strategy than a reality. I mean, when I was down 20 points, I was a great American, and now that we're doing well, suddenly I'm a bum. You know, I don't think that corresponds with the perceptions of people. It certainly doesn't correspond with you know, the newspapers around the state that endorsed me and their assessment of my record. And you know, I think the people in New Hampshire can sort through what's true and what's not.
Final question. There's still a lot of undecided voters out there, particularly among independents. They're thinking about perhaps voting for a John McCain, who is another authentic figure in the Republican primary, or voting for yourself, or even a Ron Paul. What do you say to the independents particularly, and to Democrats who haven't made up their minds yet about your candidacy and why they should vote for you tomorrow?
Well, I've got a track record of bringing people together. I've got a track record of actually taking on the special interests and winning. I've got a track record of telling the truth to the American people about what needs to happen. And, you know, if we are looking for real and meaningful change, then I think having a candidate who has a new and different perspective on many of these issues, you know, can deliver that change. And I hope that the people in New Hampshire who are famous for their independence are willing to break out of the conventional wisdom of Washington and do something different.
Senator Obama, thank you very much for your time, sir. Best of luck tomorrow. I don't think you're going to need it.
Well, thank God. You know, listen, we can always use some luck, and I also want to make sure that people have a chance to come to our rally this evening. We'll kick things off at 11 o'clock.
All right. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
That is Barack Obama, who would obviously go on to win the Democratic nomination, but it would be a long road for him after losing to Hillary Clinton here in New Hampshire on January the 8th, 2008, a comeback for Hillary Clinton and a win against what public polling and also internal polling was indicating as to what would take place. Of course, John McCain was the victor on the Republican side of things, and we hear his closing argument interview coming up next here on the program. Welcome back here on Background at WKXL 159, 1450 and ConcordNewsRadio.com. I am Chris Ryan on Background, presented by the New Hampshire Healthcare Association. We've been looking back on the 2008 New Hampshire primary, with voting occurring 10 years ago Monday on the 8th day of January 2008. We heard from Barack Obama in the previous segment of the show. Of course, he would go on to be president of the United States. I think you know that part. He did not win the New Hampshire primary, of course. Hillary Clinton won the New Hampshire primary. John McCain would go on to be the Republican nominee for president, and he would win the New Hampshire primary, and New Hampshire primary in large part catapulting him to the nomination. Mike Huckabee had won the Iowa caucuses, where he was engaged heavily with Mitt Romney. McCain did not really compete in Iowa, and his campaign in July of 2007... it was pretty much viewed as being over. He had to lay off a significant amount of staff. Their spending was off. He was down in the polls. He was in favor of a surge in an unpopular war in Iraq. And his chances were pretty much, you know, doomed. But he was allowed to go back to what brought him the success that occurred here in New Hampshire in 2000. He went back to doing town hall meetings. He was able to function below the radar and did not incur the arrows from competing candidates. And he was able to sneak up on folks once again here in New Hampshire. Despite entering the race, you know, there wasn't really a clear front runner. And Rudy Giuliani was, if there was a front runner, probably the front runner. There was some interest in Fred Thompson when he got into the race, but it really, you know, seemed like McCain and Romney were the two vying for the nomination, and Romney needed to do well here in New Hampshire, and McCain beat him here in New Hampshire. Here is our closing argument interview with U.S. Senator John McCain, who would go on to be the Republican nominee for president and a two-time winner of the New Hampshire primary.
Welcome back here in the Reporter's File on WKXL 1450 and WKXL1450.com. Senator John McCain joins us right now. It's been a great week for him. Senator McCain, how are you?
fine, Chris. How are you?
Great. Thanks for taking some time to join us. And, of course, you campaigned here across the entire Capital Region on Monday, and the endorsements continue to come in from the Boston Globe, the Herald, the Union Leader, and now the American Research Group poll has you tied with Mitt Romney, and also great results from the Rasmussen and USA Today polls for your campaign. Joe Lieberman was up here. There's so many things that have been good that are going on right now. What do you make of all this and all the excitement around your campaign right now?
Chris, I'm very heartened and appreciative of all the endorsements we've been getting. The Herald was very important. As you know, it's very rare the Globe and the Herald agree on a candidate, and the Keene Sentinel recently coming in. I think we've got the old magic back from the previous campaign from 2000. I think we've caught lightning in a bottle again, but we got a lot of work to do. It's still going to be tight. A lot of the voters have still not made up their minds, and that's why we're going to be back up there right after Christmas and spending all of our available time there at the town hall meetings and working hard. So I'm pleased, but I certainly understand that this is a long, long way from winning New Hampshire, which very frankly I have to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And another good sign for you in terms of winning New Hampshire, maybe what's going on out in Iowa, a place where you have not campaigned that much of late, but a poll out there, the American Research Group poll, has you in second place ahead of Mitt Romney, and others have you in third place. Is that important for you as well in going after the nomination to finish not first in Iowa, but to finish second or third?
Well, as you know, Chris, it's all in the expectations game. We'll never forget the comeback kid, then Governor Clinton. But I think it would be very helpful if we did well in Iowa. We're working hard out there. We got a good organization on the ground, and I want to do as well as we can. But I also would point out New Hampshire, obviously, is really also incredibly important. So it seems, when the great center for the Boston Celtics, Bill Russell, and a great philosopher, he said, when things go bad, things go bad. And we certainly had that experience last summer. And the opposite is true. when things go well nationally, they go well in New Hampshire, then they go well in Iowa. But look, I just want to emphasize again, there's so many twists and turns to this campaign so far and ups and downs. If you and I had been talking a month ago and said that Governor Huckabee is ahead in Iowa, we'd have said, well, I don't think that's a likely scenario. So we just got to keep working hard, and it's encouraging supporters and helps us raise a little extra money. But overall, I'm still very cautious in my optimism.
And you mentioned how when things go bad, they go bad. When they go good, they go good. And two issues which were supposed to doom your campaign, Iraq, which obviously has seen a dramatic turnaround there. The surge which you supported has been successful and is seen so by almost everyone observing that situation. And illegal immigration. It seems that on that issue, people are coming to you and seeing a common sense type grown-up approach to a very complex issue, which at first was very unpopular over the summer, but now it seems that people who have started to look at your position have perhaps looked at it and said, I kind of like what he has to say about it.
And, Chris, I've been saying that I got the message of our failure to comprehensive immigration legislation, and that is we got to secure the borders first. I got the message. I still think we have to have a temporary worker program. I still don't think we should have 12 million people washing around America here illegally, but they want the border secured first. As president, I will do that and have the border state governors certify their borders are secure. And we failed in immigration reform to a large degree because there's no confidence or trust in Washington anymore. And many of the people just say, in 86, you said you'd secure the borders and gave amnesty to a couple million people. Well, we see what's happened. So we got to secure the borders first, but we also have to move forward after that with comprehensive reform, in my view.
And two questions before we have to let you go. Independent voters, you've made a big focus on that. Obviously, they helped you in 2000. And talking to a lot of independent voters, it seems they're deciding between yourself and Senator Obama, both very different individuals. But the one thing that they say that draws you two together is authenticity, that you are who you say you are. The guy who talks on the campaign trail, who makes the stump speeches, is the same guy away from the field. Do you see that similarity between yourself and Obama?
I have not seen his speeches because I've obviously been busy, but I know he is making a favorable impact, appealing to all Americans to work together. And, you know, I think it's obvious that he has run a good campaign. Interesting, Chris, in 2000, there was a lot of questions as to whether people, independents, would go for Senator Bill Bradley or me back in 2000. And it's still not clear which way the independent voter is going to break. I hope that we can convince him that to come over and vote on the Republican side. As you know, many of them lean either Democrat or Republican. So that'll be one of the imponderables until, frankly, right before the election, as to how the independent voter breaks. I think we're seeing more of them at the town meetings and more support, but again, nothing's for certain in this world.
And final question, we've seen your Christmas ad. Every candidate, it seems, has a Christmas ad out, and you're going to get to spend some time with the family away from the trail on Christmas Day. What's the McCain family Christmas usually like?
Our kids are all with us, and I've taken lately to deep frying a turkey. It's a dangerous enterprise, but everybody seems to like it a lot, and I enjoy that. But my one additional message is that we want to celebrate Christmas. We want everybody to enjoy the holiday, and Americans will take a moment out to think of the 130,000 in Iraq and another 40,000 in Afghanistan that won't be with their families this Christmas. And God bless them and thank them for their honorable and courageous service, and we love them.
Thank you very much, sir. As always, look forward to seeing you next weekend.
Thank you, Chris. Look forward to seeing you.
Bye-bye. Bye.
All right, John McCain, just ahead of the New Hampshire primary back in 2008. It is the 10-year anniversary of the 2008 New Hampshire primary, an historic contest here in the Granite State. I am Chris Ryan. Appreciate you joining us for the program. We'll come back with more after this. Welcome back here on Background at WKXL 1-9, 1450 and ConcordNewsRadio.com. I am Chris Ryan on Background, presented by the New Hampshire Healthcare Association. Well, it was late in the day, late afternoon, on January the 8th, 2008, and things were starting to change for the Clinton campaign. They were starting to feel that perhaps they had a chance at winning here in New Hampshire, because they did not win in New Hampshire. It was surely over, and Barack Obama was heading to the Democratic nomination. But voters here in New Hampshire said not so fast. They said that they wanted to have a contest, basically, and see this nomination get drawn out a little bit more, and surprised folks by voting for Hillary Clinton, despite what internal polls for the Obama campaign and the Clinton campaign, as well as public polling, was indicating. So it was a last-ditch effort by the Clinton folks to get as many voters out as possible to try to shrink the deficit, which they saw as shrinking late in the day. So that is when I received a phone call from former President Bill Clinton.
Oh, great. You're right around the corner.
Oh, yep. You're
in Concord. I'm in Concord.
Okay, here we go. Welcome to the Reporter's File here on WKXL 1450 and WKXL1450.com. We're honored to be joined right now by a former president of the United States, William Jefferson Clinton, campaigning for his wife, Hillary Clinton. Last-minute efforts here in New Hampshire. Mr. President, how are you?
I'm great. I've had a wonderful time. I only wish we'd had a longer campaign in New Hampshire this year.
Yeah, absolutely.
I hope next election cycle you won't schedule this so close to Iowa, because the people in New Hampshire deserve at least 10 days between the elections so they can make an independent judgment and all have a chance to see the candidates. We've done the best we could in the time we had, and we've worked hard, and it's been wonderful.
Yeah, and I wanted to talk to you about that. And you said yesterday you're kind of disappointed in the people of New Hampshire and also the process for getting swept up in the Obama craze that we're seeing and a lot of the positive media coverage that he's gotten out of Iowa. Kind of expand upon that and what you're seeing right now.
No, I'm not disappointed in the people of New Hampshire. I think the leaders who picked this date were more concerned about having the space between New Hampshire and the election in South Carolina coming afterward and the caucus in Nevada than in giving the voters in New Hampshire enough time between Iowa and New Hampshire to make an independent judgment. I have no criticism of the people in New Hampshire. I think they've been great. And they turned out at these meetings, goodness knows, in huge numbers, trying to make a good judgment in a short amount of time. But what happens is, after Iowa, there's always like this big tidal wave of publicity to whoever wins. So you get about a 17-point bump in the polls, which is about what happened to Senator Obama. He went from being 5 or 6 points down to probably 12 points ahead. And so that takes 2 days to happen. That only left about 3 days for a real campaign. And they've been three of the most rewarding days of this election season for Hillary. I think the three best. And I don't think we even had, on a national level, a genuine campaign where people were trying to make a judgment between the comparative merits of the candidates until your debate in New Hampshire Saturday night, when people finally began to get some feel for what the choices are and what the consequences would be. So I think New Hampshire's been great. I just wish that your people had more time. And I was mobbed by people on the street today saying the same thing, saying that a lot of people were undecided as they were walking to the polling place, and they wish they'd had more time. But I love it here, as always, and the people always try to do the right thing.
Former President Bill Clinton joins us here on WKXL 1450, and you've said a number of times that you actually believe that your wife would be a better president than you were on day one because of the experience she has. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, I think for this time she would be, because in this time, the international situation is very different. When I ran here in New Hampshire, even though I was a new kid on the block in national politics, I was the longest-serving governor in America. I'd passed major economic and education initiatives, and that was a big part of what America needed. And what we needed to do then was to try to put the world together after the fall of the Soviet Union. What we have to do now is to rebuild the middle-class economy again and restart our leadership in science and technology and deal with climate change in a way that creates jobs and doesn't cost jobs. But we also have a serious security problem in the world with terror, with weapons of mass destruction, and with huge swaths of the world alienated from us. In that sort of world, I think the fact that she's already represented America in well over 80 countries, that she's a member of the Armed Services Committee, that she has a credible plan to withdraw from Iraq that has the support of a lot of senior military people, and that she has lots of experience in dealing with the kinds of problems like we're facing in Pakistan today, is a huge asset for her, because you can start from strength and not from scratch. I think that is important. But I also think it's important, and even more important, at a time when we need to change course away from what has happened the last 7 years, that she's had a lifetime of changing lives for the better, of service to other people and making their lives better. I think that was, you know, one of the things that to me was most apparent in the debate Saturday night when the moderator, I think it was the New Hampshire moderator, asked all the candidates, well, name something you've done in public life that benefited other people. And Senator Edwards talked about the Patients' Bill of Rights, which Hillary also supports, but it passed the Senate and not the House. Senator Obama talked about an ethics bill he co-sponsored, which Hillary also supported, which prohibits lobbyists from taking members of Congress to lunch. And then Charlie Gibson said, yeah, but they can still feed them if they stand up. But Hillary was able to say, I helped pass the Children's Health Insurance Program, which gives health care to more than 7,000 New Hampshire children. I co-sponsored a bill which guaranteed that the 2,700 New Hampshire members of the Guard and Reserves will have access to health care if they serve. Even when they come home, they'll be treated just like regular members of the military. And she could have talked about 15 other things she'd done that made life better for other people. And that's what you want in the present. The purpose of America is constant progress toward the common good. And people in politics are really there to help other people live their dreams and ensure that the future is better for our kids and grandkids. and she's a world-class champion at that. She spent her whole life doing it. And I think that it finally began to be clear, really for the first time in that debate. And she's had two great days since, Sunday and Monday, and we had a good day today. I was astonished by the number of people that came up to her and to me at our different polling places we work and say, well, they changed their mind in the last 2 days. They watched the debate, then they listened to what happened in the last 2 days, and they changed their mind and decided to vote for her. I even had an independent tell me today that she was on the way in trying to make up her mind between John McCain and Hillary, and in the end decided she would vote for Hillary because she was so much better on the domestic issues, and she thought she could be trusted with the security of the country.
And final question for President Clinton, and obviously one of the big things that you did when you became the comeback kid was going out to the polling places, shaking hands with people like yourself and Senator Clinton were doing today. How does she write that narrative of the comeback kid? How did you do it, and how can she write that narrative and come back and get this nomination?
Well, I think, first of all, she had to spend a lot of time in the beginning dealing with the fact that she was the first woman candidate for president that was serious, had a real chance to win. And I think she did that with commanding performances in all the debates. By common consensus, she won them all but one, where she had one bad answer. But that's really not where she got into politics to talk about how good she is. She got into politics to talk about what other people need. And I think that's what's happened in the answer. She was able to shift the focus of the debate, having proved that she was capable of being president, where all the polls, even the polls that have her behind, say that she's the most able to be an effective president. Now she can talk about why she's in this race and what she wants to do. And the fact that she's the underdog would be comfortable for her because she's been fighting for underdogs all her life. When she was in law school, she worked for abused and neglected children. Her first job out of law school for the Children's Defense Fund was finding out that a lot of poor kids were dropping out of school because they had mental or physical disabilities that weren't addressed in the schools, and they filed a report with the Congress, which later led to the current federal law, which requires an equal and appropriate education for all children. Then when she was a young lawyer, she started the first legal aid clinic in North Arkansas. When she was married to me and I was governor, she brought in our first ever preschool program that taught parents how to prepare their children better for school. She supervised a school reform program that gave hundreds of thousands of kids more opportunities. And when she was first lady, she worked on the Children's Health Insurance Program and a raft of other issues. And then as senator, has been involved in child health care for our veterans, taking care of the first responders after 9/11, and trying to articulate a new way forward on climate change that will avoid the worst consequences of global warming and lead to a new boom in clean energy jobs all across the country. So this is her, she's actually more comfortable in this position, not having to defend or prove herself, but just talk about what she wants to do for other people. And I think when the distinctions are clear about what the various records are, what the various statements are, what the various positions of the candidates are in this campaign on health care and a whole raft of other issues, I think she's going to do very well. And there's no quit in her. She's going to do just fine. I just wish if we had another week, I haven't talked to a soul today on the street that doesn't believe that she would win handily here, because we've turned this around and people are beginning to see her as their champion, which is how she spent her life.
Well, President Clinton, thank you very much. It sounds like you have an extreme amount of pride about the way that you and your wife have run this campaign, and I guess just hoping that there'd be a little more time for you guys, but unfortunately...
I think she's done great in New Hampshire, and I told a group of her people from around the country today that this presidential campaign did not really begin until the New Hampshire debate Saturday night. We'll always be grateful for that. It was the first time that any of the moderators attempted at least to get to the meat of the coconut about what presidents do and what the differences would be and how these prospective candidates, all of whom are intelligent, good people, would handle that job. And I thought it was just great. And I think she's going to do just fine tonight, and then we'll go on to the next state. But I'm, as always, profoundly grateful to the people of New Hampshire, and so is she. And we hope if anybody's listening to me and you haven't voted, you go out and vote before the polls close tonight.
President Clinton, thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.